Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more movie and nostalgia podcasts, visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, the podcast where we revisit pop culture from our youth to see if it's as good all grown up. I'm Jordan Poland Clark. With me is my co-host, Kara Gail O'Regan.
Hello.
Or as text edit would have me call you, Kara Gail Oregon. I didn't fix it this time. It was really hard not to read it like that. And today, we begin Adam Sandler month.
Yep.
Because this year, we're going through all of the maybe kind of terrible 90s male comedians.
No, maybe not all. Not necessarily all.
Okay. And maybe it's not all terrible. We've done Mike Myers, we have done Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler is our third, right? I didn't miss anyone?
No, we also took a detour into Matthew Lillard and Kirsten Dunst.
But they don't fall into that category. That was just for sanity. And so we have chosen four Adam Sandler movies split over two podcasts. We are going to start today with Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, which were his first two movies that he starred in. Is that true? I should look.
Yeah, he was in other movies.
Say things.
He was in other movies before this, like Airheads.
But these were like his first like starring vehicles.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So Billy Madison came out in 1995. Happy Gilmore was the next year in 96. I think they were both pretty successful because he was super famous. I think it feels like this was like the peak of his fame. Like, he was super famous on Saturday Night Live. And then he left to be a movie star. And he made these dumb movies
that it turns out I really enjoyed,
which I love so much. I miss it. So I liked watching them because I had seen them so many times as a kid. Like, who didn't know all the words to Billy Madison? Like, just everybody watched it. Right?
I didn't.
Really?
I maybe saw it like once or twice over the years. I definitely saw Happy Gilmore a bunch more times. And I definitely saw Airheads a shitload of times because that was on Comedy
Central. That was also on all the
constantly.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, like, my friends and I thought like Stop Looking at Me, Swan was like the funniest thing in the entire world, you know, when we were 8.
I laughed so much at Billy Madison. I was shocked. I really like from the very beginning was laughing so hard, and I just didn't expect that to happen.
I love that so much.
Yeah,
I love
it was
it
a really pleasant
so
surprise.
Much.
Turns out it was directed by a woman.
I know, Tamara Davis.
I was not actually going to watch the movie. I was like, I'm just going to be like, I didn't have time. Whatever. And then I almost didn't have time.
Okay, sure.
It was in the neighborhood of truth. But then I happened to notice that it was directed by a woman. So I was like, okay, I'll make some time. And I'm so glad that I did because it's really good.
Okay, I don't think really good are the right words. Like, the way I described it to you, which is like, it's really bad, but there's a lot there. That's still how I feel.
I enjoyed it enough to say that it's good.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So if you've never
seen... I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good.
No, of course not.
This is obviously a subjective opinion, but I think it's good.
Now I'm looking at all the things that Tamara Davis directed, because I totally meant to do that before we started recording.
Yeah, pretty wild. She also made Half-Baked, which I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I knew that. That was the only one I could think of.
Times. Yeah.
That was the only one I could think of off the top of my head. She's also married to one of the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, but I don't know.
She directed a lot of music videos.
She also made an interesting documentary about Jean-Michel Basquiat that I really want to watch. It's on Amazon Prime, so I'll probably watch it later.
She directed the one time that Britney Spears tried to be an actress.
Oh my god, okay.
Crossroads.
Yeah. Crossroads. The craziest movie in movie history. You want to know who wrote the screenplay for that?
Who wrote Crossroads?
Shonda fucking Rhimes.
Dang, yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's not great.
It's not great, but I think it's worth revisiting.
It was fun to watch. I watched it once. It was fine, but it's not a good
movie.
What
if it's good?
No.
Who knows?
Nope, it's not a good movie.
We don't know that.
It's not a good movie.
I think it's worth revisiting.
I watched it in the last, like, 6 years, and it was not good.
Have you been following, like, what's going on with Britney Spears right now?
No, I just keep seeing things where she's like, I'm okay. But I don't know why she's saying that.
Yeah. Well, there's this whole... let's not get into it. This is a whole other podcast. But she may or may not be being held against her will in a mental health facility, like, since January. Like, she definitely has spent some time there. But, like, the official, like, timeline of it is a little fishy. And it's, like, not clear whether it's actually... like, her doing or not. But also, at the same time, I feel, like, really dirty and guilty for even, like, talking or thinking about that. Because I'm like, none of this is any of our beeswax.
No, it's none of our business, and we do that to celebrities.
Yeah. And especially her. I mean, good God, that poor woman. But at the same time, like, if it is against her will, then free Britney.
How can an adult be held against their will?
Well, so if you get in my time machine... we can travel back to 2008, which you may remember as that time that Britney Spears went crazy.
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was all over the news constantly for a really long time. I actually happened to be taking a gender images in media class with Camille Paglia, who's like a... pretty famous feminist blowhard, like, but like a contrarian feminist blowhard. She's interesting, but it was an interesting class, and it happened to be going on while, like, during that semester, so it was like our homework to pay attention to it. And like one of our essay questions on our final exam was about Britney Spears and like what was going on. But anyway, at some point, I think it was like after she shaved her head, she was held under something called a 5150, I think, which is when an adult person seems to be a hazard to themselves or others, they can be taken into protective custody in a mental health facility. And I think it's usually for like 48 hours. And so that kept getting extended. And then a judge granted her father, who I was going to say is also her manager, but that's not true. But they granted her father like a custodianship, basically, which takes away all of her decision making. She can't drive. She can't sign contracts. She has basically like no legal rights as an adult, and her father is her guardian. And it was only supposed to be like, for like a short period of time, and then something fishy happened, and it got extended, and it's been going on for 10 years. And so... it's a complicated situation.
Jeez, that sucks.
It really sucks, and it's really sad because it's like, you know, again, none of our beeswax, but at the same time, like, if she has been in this conservatorship for a decade non-consensually, you know, like, unable to make her own choices about where she goes and who she spends time with and what jobs she takes, like, that's really fucked up.
Jeez. I'm gonna tell you one of my favorite stories, or one of my favorite things that I ever witnessed. I was working at a network news radio, and we had, you know, we have, like, correspondents who we call to comment on things when, you know, whatever, when stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this legal correspondent who we called once when something happened with Lindsay Lohan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some, you know, the same kind of thing where it's like, it's, why is anyone even talking about this? But it's like, people cover it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Because that was also like the time of like Perez Hilton and.
Yes.
Like, and really, like, paparazzis have always been intense, but like a really, that period of time was so intense for like famous young women, for people like Lindsay Lohan, like Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, and like whatever, like they at literally everywhere they went, they could not like be alone. They'd be followed by like hundreds of people taking photographs, waiting for them to screw up and reporting on their every move when they were like 19 and 20 years old. Where,
yeah,
which,
well, that's because,
like,
I mean, it's like when like the internet exploded and got, yeah, really gossipy, you know, like, did you,
yeah,
ever, you don't know, they didn't.
I don't think so. But, like, Hollywood gossip has always been a thing, but that was, like, when it, like, entered this kind of, like, hyper crazy, crazy time. But, yeah, sorry, continue.
So we called this legal correspondent to be like, hey, can you just, like, talk about this? And he literally was just like, nope. Like, hung up. I just, like, it was so, like, like, obviously he was right.
Yeah.
And it was so rare to see
somebody have principles.
Yeah,
like that.
It was so, well, rare to see somebody be like, yeah, no, that's dumb. I'm not,
yeah,
gonna do
or
that.
Even like I see this a lot on cable news, like after it's reported that like somebody's gone into the hospital or something like that. Like recently Ruth Bader Ginsburg underwent surgery, and my boyfriend had MSNBC on or something, and they had some doctor on the television talking about like her prognosis and like all of this stuff, where I was just like, anybody who like actually has any sort of ethics would be like, it's not ethical for me to comment on any, like, any patient,
yeah,
let alone somebody,
like,
that I've never treated.
About any of this.
Yeah, it really, I find it very distasteful.
Okay, Adam Sandler.
Yes.
Well, I want to ask you first, like, what was your relationship with Adam Sandler when you were young?
SNL reruns on Comedy Central, which featured such classics as Lunch Lady Land and...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. The opera singer guy,
yep,
and, like, you know, all of his other recurring sketches. Like I said, Airheads airing on Comedy Central over and over again. Definitely watched Happy Gilmore a bunch of times. But, like, my favorite thing that Adam Sandler did was The Wedding Singer, and I've seen that, like, a bunch of times. And I think of that as, like, a later work in his career, but it only came out in, like, 1998, like, three or four years after these movies that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then after that, didn't really track his career much because he was making movies and stuff that I just wasn't interested in.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to, next episode, we'll talk about The Wedding Singer and we'll talk about Punch Drunk Love.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, but I watched Billy Madison a lot more than you did, and Happy Gilmore also. And I just remember, like, really liking the Thanksgiving song and the Hanukkah song.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was a time where, like, you just had to wait for a song to come on the radio if you wanted to hear it, and, like, they would play those songs around
the holidays,
Thanksgiving and Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember, like, sitting with my, like, boombox radio just, like, waiting for the Thanksgiving song to come on so that I could, like, hit record and, like, record it on a tape. I don't know if I ever did, but I remember, like, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then being like, yeah, it's on! Yeah, and then I guess I liked The Wedding Singer. I don't even really remember caring much about him after that. Like, I remember seeing The Waterboy. And then, like, that's it. I think I was done after that.
Oh, and 50 Little First Nikki. Dates, which also has Drew Barrymore in it.
Yeah, I never saw that one.
That's not great. She's a very memory loss pixie dream girl in that one.
Okay, so... Oh, I did see Funny People, like, many, many years later, which he's in. Billy Madison stars Adam Sandler as a dude who's probably in his late 20s, whose dad owns a really successful hotel chain, so he's very rich and privileged and just, like, basically doesn't ever have to do anything. He just, like, sits around and drinks all day with his two friends, one of whom is an actor I don't know, the other one is Norm Macdonald.
Okay.
Because this was the time period where, like, Norm Macdonald was, like, a little bit in every comedy movie.
This was the very first one.
Billy Madison finds out that his dad is going to retire and somehow makes a deal with him where if he completes grades 1 through 12 and passes them all in a certain amount of time, he gets to inherit the company, and if he fails, the company goes to Bradley Whitford, whose name I can't remember, but he's amazing.
Yeah, well, he's the vice president of this company, and so he's, like, the logical choice for the successor of
But he's also
father.
The worst.
But he's also the worst. and then the reason that Billy Madison has to go back to school is because his father has revealed to him that the only reason that he ever graduated from anything is because he just bribed everyone.
Right.
So he makes this deal that if he goes back and spends 2 weeks in every single grade and, like, makes up for it and graduates from every grade, then he can be president of this Fortune 500 company.
Right.
Which totally makes sense.
So
that's definitely all of the qualifications that you need. Isn't it like I was so interested by this because it's like touching on so many, like, very relevant themes about privilege and you know, like, all of the stuff that came to light recently with, like, the college admissions scandal and, like, all of that stuff. I was thinking about a lot while I was watching this.
Here's the only note that I made. I didn't do a good job taking notes during either one of these movies, and here's the only thought that I was like, I'm gonna write this one down. I wrote the phrase, man-child with a good heart, and good heart has quotes around it. And then in parentheses, I wrote white, wealthy, and deserving with quotes around it. And, like, that's the characters that he plays.
Yeah.
Like, they're not good people. They aren't really deserving of success. But, like, they are framed in such a way where, like, no matter what shitty thing they do, we are meant to sympathize with them because they do like, one nice thing that's supposed to make up for the fact that they're shitty people.
Well, I think in Billy Madison, the character is, like, learning how to be a better, like, more considerate person. Like, he's just floated through life before, like, fucking up constantly and making things a nightmare for everyone. And then, like, he goes back and has to, like, relive his life and, like, learn the lessons that about, like, dealing with other people and interacting with other people that he never had to learn before.
He just never had to do it before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes through grades. Well, he gets, like, grade 1 through 9, right? And then there's Bradley Whitford's character bribes the high school principal, who the high school principal was a former wrestler who accidentally killed somebody in the ring, And Bradley Whitford finds this out and then blackmails him into lying about Billy cheating and blah, 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 blah. So they have an academic decathlon where Bradley Whitford and Billy compete. And I like that part a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
It has a really great monologue at the end where the guy judging it gives that great little monologue about how bad his answer was to one of the questions.
It was like, I award you no points,
and may God have mercy on your soul.
But actually, so I was also thinking a lot about Wayne's World while I was watching this, because there are a ton of references to other movies, but they're not all of them are like as obvious as they are in Wayne's World. And in this specific scene that you're talking about, the nonsensical answer that he gives at the very end, he's like, "Knob High Football Rules." And that is a Bill and Ted reference. Sandy Knob High School Football Rules.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Made me laugh real hard.
This movie is endlessly quotable. Like, I guess not really if you haven't watched it over and over again.
Yeah.
But, like the thing with the shampoo and the conditioner, and stop looking at me, swan, and...
The
like,
mucus the... queen is yours.
Yeah. And the thing about the Triscuits.
I'm not sure remember that
part
one.
It's really close to the beginning, and it's Bradley Whitford and the other guy, Who's the other guy?
Oh, yeah, the other guy. I don't know who he is, but he's some other guy.
I like him, too. I don't know who he is. Some other guy who works for his dad. They, you don't remember the Triscuit parts?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I was still mad about the rose bushes, probably.
What? Why?
Well, because he runs over a bunch of rose bushes at the beginning. It was very upsetting.
We see very different things in movies sometimes. there's a great musical number.
Oh, yeah. There were so many times where I just was, like, laughing so hard and saying, like, what the fuck is happening?
It's
incredible.
That's the, like, one thing that I saw watching it this time that, wait, first of all, I'm going to paint you a picture. Mm-hmm. I have a projector in my room, and I watched this movie with two friends, and we were like, okay, we'll go in my room, we'll watch it on the projector. And one of my friends was like, actually, we could put the projector on the ceiling, and that would be even better. And I was like, oh, no, that's a great idea, and also very dangerous. So, like, now I have the ability to just lay down in my bed and watch movies on the ceiling.
Nice.
Which is how we watched this.
That sounds great.
So, this movie is really surreal. It's not really, I don't think that it's really smart enough to do it well in a lot of ways.
I disagree.
But there were a lot of, like, there's a lot of, like, what the fuck? Like, there's a penguin.
Literally the second note that I made after I'm so mad about those rose bushes, the second note that I made was, is this a work of Dadaism? Which I don't know if you're familiar with the artistic movement called Dadaism. It was like a post-World War I kind of reaction to that was kind of, people usually like simplify it by saying it's anti-art, but it's like... It's more complicated than that, but it was, like, a lot of, like, rejecting of, like, logic and traditional aestheticism, and, like, in favor of expressing, like, total nonsense and irrationality. And I think that hypothesis held up throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, if you explain it like that, like, yeah, but, okay, hold on, we'll get to why I cannot, like, fully accept that.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, yeah, there's a penguin that he sees often when he's drunk, just, like, a huge, like, man-sized penguin that he chases around. Every time he graduates a grade, he gets a huge ridiculous party, and they get more and more ridiculous, and if you look in the background, like, you can see some pretty hilarious things going on.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna watch this again, then, because there's clearly more for me to see there.
And one of them, there's a clown who accidentally gets killed, and like just like blood so comes out of his mouth. It's like it's so gross, and for no reason, for no reason.
But then the clown comes back during the musical number.
Oh my god! And an entire family dies because their car slips on a banana peel,
which was brilliant. It was
down
like
a mountain.
But it was like a Chekhov's gun of a banana peel, because it sets it up earlier in the movie, and then I was like, oh, that's going to come back later.
Obviously.
And then it did in the most ridiculous way. It's brilliant. This is so good.
What else? Yeah, there's like a full-on musical number, and all that was great.
Oh my god, oh my god. The other thing that I loved so much that was just so fucking weird was when he was still in the first grade. There's a shot of him like banging erasers in the background, and in the foreground his first grade teacher is just sitting there with this creepy smile plastered on her face while she paints her eyes with paste.
Yeah, I love Miss Lippy.
She is.
Talk about eyebrows.
Oh god, why isn't she in everything?
I love Miss Lippy. She's so great.
She's so good.
He also like I laughed a lot when he was like pelting those kids with the dodgeball. Like, I don't know if I should have, but it was really funny.
At the same time, I was just like, oh my god, all of these like memories of being pelted with balls like coming back to me from like gym class and stuff.
There was one other part that I was like, oh, that's pretty weird. Oh, his, okay, I have questions. I'm gonna talk about some things that could be more problematic now.
Yeah, and there's plenty of that, too.
The maid at the house.
Yeah. She's definitely, like, a mammy sort of character.
Yeah, but is that, like, are they doing that on purpose, and they know that's what she is, and they're trying to be ridiculous about it, or are they just super racist?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It, like, based on, like, the other kind of like self-aware things in the movie, I think that they're using that like as a just a conventional like character to kind of like twist a little bit and make it weird. You know, I don't know if like in 1994 the racial aspect of it even like entered into their brains.
It had to have.
I hope so. I mean, who knows? But the thing that's weird about her, aside from that, is that she wants to fuck Billy Madison.
No, that's why I brought it up, because it's so funny.
Dude, that was the first time that I laughed, like, so hard, was at the very beginning of the movie, where he, like, walks out of the room, and she's like, that kid sure is a damn fine fool, or something like that, and then she's like, what, he's a damn fine piece of ass, too.
Yeah, she's just, like, is constantly like hitting on him and like trying to fuck him and like,
but not just him, it seems like she's trying to fuck all sorts of people.
I don't know, we don't see her do it to anyone else.
Yeah, she fucks somebody in this movie, and
I
don't remember who. Yeah, sometimes toward the end, maybe not fucks, definitely makes out with somebody though. Oh, when everyone starts making out with each other.
Who does she make out with? Steve Buscemi?
I don't remember. Maybe, yeah, that sounds right.
Also, Steve Buscemi's in this movie.
Also, Steve Buscemi's in this
movie.
That
part's super weird, too. That's another one that I have a question about, because
I think is actually a Silence of the Lambs reference.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
he's
going to
be the serial killer, and then he, like, crosses the name off the list, lays back, and, like, puts on lipstick.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That is what it is.
Yeah. No, because I was concerned about that, too, but then, like, because I was kind of, like, picking up all of these other kind of subtle references to other stuff, I figured that's what was going on.
My problem is, when I said before that I don't think it's smart enough to do what it's trying to do well, like, that's kind of what I mean, is, like, I didn't really get that as a reference. I can see it now, but it's, like, it just doesn't do a good enough job where, like, so much of it is really dumb, is actually really dumb and offensive, that the parts that are trying not to be and maybe actually weren't meant to be still read that way.
Yeah, they definitely can, especially I think this long after that, and not just because like standards of like what is okay has changed, but the movies that are being referenced in this movie are so, like, there's so much more distance between them now. You know, watching this in 1994 or 5, whenever it came out, like, Silence of the Lambs just came out 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. It would have, like, been much easier to pull that reference from your brain then.
Yeah. Because then there are other ones that are more obvious, like the Godfather kiss. His romantic interest in this movie is played by the same actress that played Sonya Blade in the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah.
And there are several Mortal Kombat references.
There are?
Yeah.
Where?
Oh my goodness. The kids actually have a conversation about video games and talk about Mortal Kombat.
They do. But that's just because that was a thing then also. Like, everyone played Mortal Kombat in 1995.
Well, yeah, but also somebody who's in the movie is in this movie. And then, like, at some point, she starts beating the shit out of Billy Madison, which, by the way, I loved.
She does, but she does it in a white shirt and falls into a fountain.
Yes, that's on purpose. Like, that's...
But is it, like, because they spend the rest of the movie disgustingly objectifying her.
Yeah, but...
Like, so then when you do that on purpose, like, I can't read it that way, you know?
But the monologue that she has in that scene when she is, like, in a white shirt soaking wet and wearing a bra underneath, by the way.
She was wearing a bra, it's true.
There's also not a single sex scene in this movie. The only time we see him, like, get anywhere past first base or whatever is when he's, like, making out with her photograph and, like, fondling an imaginary breast.
No, they kiss.
They kiss. Yeah. I don't know what the bases are. Not a teenager anymore.
No, you're right. I have a new question.
Yes.
Does Adam Sandler have sex in any of his movies? Or does he, like, I feel like that is his, like.
I don't think that we've seen enough of them to make that.
I can't think of it, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because, like, he doesn't, I don't think he fucks anyone in Happy Gilmore.
No.
And there's Julia Gulia thinks that he had sex with somebody else in The Wedding Singer, but he didn't. She just slept over and wore his Van Halen t-shirt.
Yeah, like, sex is definitely referenced, but not, you'll never, I can't think of seeing Adam Sandler have sex in any of his movies. That's God. What I mean. Yeah, no. And I don't want to, I'm not asking for it. But that's like, there are other male leads.
Yeah, of course.
Who, like, that would be totally normal.
Yeah.
But for some reason, for him, it doesn't. But okay, let's talk about Veronica Vaughn. Mm-hmm. Like, she's, I just can't get over how much, like, she's so much better than him, and she's doing that woman thing.
Yeah.
Where she's like, sure, I'll fix you.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. We can't, like...
It's really bad in his movies. It's really bad in this one. It's really bad in Happy Gilmore.
It's really bad in most movies.
But I can't forgive it, and I can't forgive it, you know?
No, I don't blame you, but, like, if we're gonna keep doing this, like, male comedian thing from the 90s thing, like, we can't keep having the same conversation.
No, yes, we can. This is why we're all fucked up.
Yeah.
Because this is who we thought we were supposed to be.
I mean... Maybe.
Well, okay, because, like, this... So I tried to do some Googling about this and couldn't find a ton, but, like, this kind of, like, man-child character, like, was very strong in the 90s and early 2000s.
And this is an early example of it.
Yeah. And I think it probably existed in the 80s, too, but...
Oh, for sure. But, like, there was a very, like, specific man-baby...
Yeah, like, it was very, very, very strong while we were growing up. Like, at a time where it mattered, the kinds of things that we were seeing. And, dude, like, that's why we're fucked up. Like, this is what we thought men were supposed to be.
Yeah, but we're fucked up for a lot of reasons. No, this is just one of them.
Yeah, I know. I just, like, as a person who spent many years in relationships with men that I was trying to fix. Like, I feel pissed off.
Okay.
That this
so
is
this
the
is
only,
really all it's about you,
really,
Jordan.
Obviously.
No, you but keep you saying know, this is why we're fucked up.
No, but I'm saying it like that because I know a ton of women who are like that. Like, I know that it's not just me.
No, you're right. And there, it's in so many movies that, like, of course it matters because these are the things that are, you know, shaping young brains. But yeah, you're not wrong.
And they're just like, they're so gross to her, like, and she just plays it off, which, like, she, like, literally laughs about it.
Yeah, well, but also she's like, what grade was that, 7th grade?
No, she was a 3rd grade teacher.
3rd grade, oh, okay.
Second, 3rd grade, I think. And, like, she like, reads him correctly, like, pretty immediately. She's like, you're the worst, like, I don't want to deal with you, what, you're spoiled, like, this is stupid, whatever. And then, like, he fake pees in his pants for Ernie, and then that's the thing. And then she's just like, oh, whatever, you're fine. Yeah, I guess I'll date you, because you did that one nice thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And then Chris Farley looks up her skirt.
Yeah.
I don't care for that. His hair, though. He has, like, a really crazy comb-over thing going on.
Yeah. Did you happen to notice all of the snack pack product placement?
Yes. I did, and I thought of you.
I thought of you! I wrote it down. Well, the scene where they, like, kiss for the first time happens, like, in the tent that he lives in, mm-hmm. in the backyard of his mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, like, we get a closer, like, a more intimate look into, like, his interior life. Because, like, up to then, we've really just only seen, like, the outward outbursts and weird voices and whatever, but, like, in his own space, like, it would appear that he's actually a genius, ? Because he has, like, all of this, like, math things and puzzles, and he has a tuba and a French horn, although later...
Which he clearly can't play.
Yeah, I was like, I got really excited when I saw the tuba and the French horn and sheet music, two different things of sheet music, later during the decathlon. Well, we don't know that he can't play them because he doesn't
play them.
But
then why
would
he play the clarinet?
Instead, he plays a clarinet backwards. He's holding it backwards, by the way.
Too much of it in his mouth.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting to, like, see inside of, like, his
intimate
space.
But don't you think
space.
That maybe that's just, like, shit that his dad bought him?
It absolutely
that he's never touched.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, like, yes, that's definitely a possibility, but at the same time, then why would it be inside of that tent? Why
because
wouldn't it just be in the mansion?
I don't know. He needed to fill it with something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so I sent you a link to a piece that the director, Tamara Davis, wrote for, like, the 20th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And I excerpted this quote from it because it was an interesting kind of insight into, like, where she was in making this movie. Quote, in a strange twist of events, the director they hired shot for a few days, and then I got the call that Universal wanted me to replace him. I flew to set in Toronto on a Thursday and started work on Monday. The movie was in trouble. Adam was so stressed that his neck had stiffened up and he couldn't move his head. My job was to save the film and make it funny. I hung out as much as possible with Adam and Tim Hurley? Is that a Hurley? Yeah, that looks
like a Hurley. Yeah, who I never heard of, but wrote, like, all of Adam Sandler's movies with him.
Yeah. I was trying to understand his comedy, become his biggest fan, and laugh as much as possible at this silly world that we were about to create. I overloaded the sets and costumes with color to show how a kid sees things. My other goal was to make sure every crew member on the set was happy, giving me their best work. I wanted Adam to walk on set and only see faces looking to laugh. I learned early in my career not to let myself get in the way of humor, but instead find what is great in a talented person. I always had to genuinely like the actors I worked with and use my enthusiasm and vision to give them confidence to push their creativity and humor. I just thought that was, like, interesting to...
And that makes me think she's the only reason why this movie's any good.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah. You know, she's a director. That is her job. But, I mean, like, if, you know...
Well, her
someone
job
else had directed
to,
it, it might have been very different, and we might not be talking about it now at all.
It would be completely different. There were so many things that I saw in this that I was like, that is, like, that's a female gaze, that's a woman's touch, you know, things like the, like, him making out with the photograph instead of, like, showing an actual sex scene. A lot of times they're, like, when there is, you know, something like really toxic that happens, like as Billy Madison is like learning to be a better person, he's seeing other people act in these ways that he's acted in the past, and he actually like pushes back on it.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't to say he pushes back on it, but he doesn't necessarily hold that person mm-hmm. accountable for it. Like when they're on the bus and they dare him to go touch her boobs, and he's like, touch her boobs, that's assault. And he like pauses for a moment and then is like, you double dog dare me, and then he goes and does it, you
yeah.
know. But that conversation I don't think would have happened if a woman hadn't been there, you know, things like that that I found really interesting. And like her job as a director is to take what was in the script or take what is in these people's heads and translate it and make it into something watchable and something funny. And so in this essay she also talks about how a lot of the most quotable lines in this movie actually weren't from the script at all and were improvised on set, or how Adam Sandler would have these ideas, like the clown thing. And at first she was like, I don't know, that doesn't sound funny. But like the two of them like trusting each other and like bringing these like weird ideas to fruition in a way that could have failed entirely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like certain things about this movie certainly failed, but like I think overall it's like really interesting and bizarre, and I really enjoyed it. And now I just want to go watch all of her other movies, because this is also like, usually when a director makes a movie they have like prep time to like
right.
think about what they want to do with it, to work with a storyboard artist, to, you know, like work with production
like,
designer,
do their job
all
well.
Of those stuff. Yeah. You know, so she had like interviewed for this position, and then they told, I guess Adam Sandler actually wanted to like work with an old friend, and so that's who they gave the job to first. And then they went and were like, oh, whoops, can you come do this at the last minute? So I think that that is like really fascinating.
A thing happens in this movie that I was like, whoa, 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 couldn't happen today. Do you know what it is?
No, because there's too many of them.
Yes, but this one was like, whoa, like glaringly obvious.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a gun in the school at the end.
What,
Bradley
there?
Whitford, like, tries to
oh,
shoot them all
yeah.
in the school.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
I don't think anyone would ever put that in a movie again unless it was a movie about, like, a
school
shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure. Another thing that I noticed, like, hit the scenes with his friends, like, Norm MacDonald and the other guy, like, they're clearly stoned, but there's no evidence that they've been smoking weed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that really interesting. And I mentioned it to my boyfriend, and he was like, oh, is this rated PG-13? And it is. So that's probably why.
Can you not show weed smoking in a PG-13 movie?
At least not at that time. I think now, obviously, it's just, like, so much more,
yeah,
like,
you can
accepted.
Probably show it a certain number of times now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, like, where the MPAA stands on that at this moment in history, but, like, at that time, that definitely was not something that would pass, like, for PG-13, because Half-Baked is definitely rated R.
I'm looking it up right now. Half-Baked is rated R.
Yeah. I could keep talking about this movie for a really long time, but I also really want to go eat dinner, so can we talk about Happy Gilmore now?
Yeah. Okay, so Happy Gilmore came out the next year. It came out in 1996. Again, this stars Adam Sandler as a character named Happy Gilmore, who is a wannabe hockey player who can't skate or handle the puck. He's just really good at like
Slap shots.
slap shots. I was like, oh
And
shit,
also
I don't know the
fighting.
word for this. And also
Yeah.
what?
Fighting.
Oh my God, yeah.
Fighting used to be a much bigger component of hockey, and then the NHL like banned it.
He
Which is definitely for the best, but also it's like
is
not
kind of fun.
nearly
That
as
was
much
like,
fun as it used to be.
did you ever play the video game Blades of Steel?
No, I don't
It
think so.
was a Nintendo game. And the best part was like every once in a while you could get these little like blobs of color to fight each other on the rink. Okay, so he's kind of like a pretty similar character to Billy Madison, although he's not rich. But he is a terrible man child.
Who has rage and anger control issues?
This movie is literally just him throwing things at people
And
and
yelling. My first note is so much punching and yelling.
hold on, I have to read you the first line of Roger Ebert's review of this movie. So anyway, he's got a great slap shot. By accident, he finds out that that slap shot also works for golfing. And his grandma, he loves his grandma. She's the one who raised him. Her house is getting repossessed. So he's
Because she
got
hasn't paid her
a, she hasn't
taxes
made her
in a
taxes yet.
decade.
So he's got to raise a lot of money in a really short amount of time and decides to do it by winning golf tournaments. Because he apparently is good enough to do that. So he kind of like comes in and shakes up, what is known to be kind of a quiet, boring sport by, throwing things and cursing and
Hitting things very hard.
so here's the first two sentences of Roger Ebert's review. Happy Gilmore tells the story of a violent sociopath. Since it's about golf, that makes it a comedy.
That's certainly one way to look at it, yeah.
This movie, it was also, I think this is a better movie structurally
I mean,
in some ways.
it's more of a movie than the other one is.
It's
Like part of the kind of like Dadaist like flair of Billy Madison makes it l like kind of plays with the structure of filmmaking, and like it's like if you like have an idea of like what a movie is that's like very structured and has like a certain format, which most people think that there is like that. But I don't know. What am I trying to say, Jordan? How I am trying to express this abstract concept in a way that just is not working. But you know what? That's good. Billy Madison, more abstract than this
Yeah,
one.
that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like a lot of the surrealism that's in Billy Madison just isn't in this, except that a lot of people die in this. It's
Yeah.
just like, I guess it's meant to be funny. It's not funny, the amount
I
of people that
think,
die.
like, you know how when we did Mike Myers Month, I was like, Mike Myers' humor is like 92% ableism and racism, and like, there's these like really big chunks that are something very specific to his humor, and I think Adam Sandler is like just violence is a large chunk of his, you know,
Just like people hitting stuff, which
people
like
hitting stuff, which is
honestly,
funny.
it
It's
was funny
hilarious.
half of the time in this.
Yeah.
50% of the time when somebody got hit with something or when he threw something at somebody, I laughed.
Yeah.
But the other half of the time it wasn't funny. Like it was very overdone.
Yeah. But that's another like kind of hallmark of his style, I think.
Agree, yeah. And him just yelling. He yells a lot. What do you think about Chubbs's hand?
I forgot about it. So I was like, oh, right. No, I mean, it's, you know, obviously if you're going to have a disabled character, it would be better if it was played by a disabled actor, which mm-hmm. it is not. Mm-hmm. Carl Weathers is great in this, though. You know, I did actually notice some, like, visibly disabled people in the background, like, mm-hmm. in the extras, which is interesting. That's not something that you usually see on film, or people using wheelchairs. And if you do, you see them in what are called transport chairs, which is, like, what they use in the hospital to shuttle people around, and mm-hmm. not, like, the actual kinds of wheelchairs that people who actually use wheelchairs on a day-to-day basis have, you know. So to see that in the background was interesting. The hand is used for humor a lot in the movie, because at one point it's like he like throws it, or it gets hit, like it goes flying and a truck runs over it and it breaks. And then that sets up some other jokes throughout the film, which is like, you know, prosthetics are incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. and most people who need them need to jump through a lot of hoops to even have access to them. So I don't love, you know, seeing, like, somebody normalizing destroying somebody's prosthetic, because it, you know, devalues these, like, essential aids that people use in their daily lives. So I don't know, it's complicated, but it wasn't like so egregious. Mm-hmm. I think that there were some other things in this, like disability wise in this and in Billy Madison's, certainly, that are more problematic, but you know, not great, but it's like not a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm. This movie feels like it was paid for entirely by Subway.
Yeah. Like, it's, well, a Subway commercial. AT&T, Pepsi, because, yeah, I mean, each of these individual tournaments are sponsored by a different sponsor. So they got lots of product placement in there, but he does do a commercial for Subway.
Well, and even in the beginning, he's coming home to his girlfriend who's leaving him, and he's like, wait, I got Subway.
Oh,
like, it starts right away.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. Well, so while he's on the pro tour, his antagonist is another golfer by the name of Shooter McGavin. Did you happen to recognize that guy from something that we watched recently?
Yeah, I looked it up. I forgot already. He's in something that we watched.
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't remember what his name is in real life, but he played Matthew Lillard's dad in
SLC Punk. That's right.
Yeah. Like, kind of like genial, wealthy asshole.
He's like so easy to hate. He's very yeah. good in that character type.
And he actually didn't want to do this movie because he was kind of sick of playing that character. But for some reason, Adam Sandler.
He's perfect in this.
Yeah, he's so good. Oh, but you know who was also considered for it was Bruce Campbell. It would be a very
good.
Different character, but I could totally see him yeah. in this too.
I would have found him harder to hate.
Yeah.
And the love interest is
Julie Bowen,
who is in
so
Modern Family.
Yeah.
Very, and she was very like 90s woman, mm-hmm. that young 90s woman dressed mm-hmm. up like she's 50 years old when she's
yeah.
like 28 years old.
Suit and like a skirt suit situation mm-hmm. and her like short hair. Yeah, she's so mm-hmm. cute in this. There's a couple of fantasy sequences. You know, I love a fantasy sequence. And I love these in particular. And I had completely forgot that they were in the movie. And then the second they started happening, I was like, oh my God, I forgot about this. Where he is happy, is encouraged to go to his happy place. And he imagines Julie Bowen in like thigh highs and like a corset, like laying on a bed with two pitchers of beer, and there's, you know, a nice sunshine and water spray and flowers, and for some reason there's a little person there and he's riding a tricycle, which is fine.
Questions
I guess.
About that part?
Yeah, but like, you know, relatively harmless. No harm comes to that character. You know,
no,
it's like not
true.
A mini-me situation by any means. So sure, why not? That guy got paid. Cool. And his grandma's there and she's winning all sorts of money. And then there's like later in the film a attempted fantasy sequence that goes awry, which is also great.
Yeah, because Shooter McGavin blows through it, ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his grandma in this movie played every grandma.
Yeah,
ever.
I thought for a moment that it was the same actress, the meatball lady from The Wedding Singer, but it's not. It's a different old lady.
Oh, Christopher McDonald, who's Shooter McGavin, was also in The Faculty.
I feel like
teachers?
He's like one of the first people to get killed.
Yeah, I feel like he had a small role.
He was like the first guy that got killed. So Happy does eventually win enough money, but he's like gonna try and buy this house back, and I was so stressed out because I was like, if he uses all that money to buy the house, he's not gonna have any money left over to pay taxes on those winnings, and this is just gonna like compound this problem. I was getting very, after a particularly rough tax day this year, was a little stressed out about that for him.
But he'll be okay because he'll be golf famous by that point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he get more endorsement deals. Like, he'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a problem that compounds for people. You got to pay agents. You got to pay managers. That's why, like, every once in a while, like, celebrities every once in a while just like wind up going to jail or something because they didn't realize that they had to like put money aside for taxes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking a lot about the expressions of anger and rage in this, and just like nothing specific, but just about like women's expressions of anger and rage and how we're like not allowed to do those things, and have to kind of bend over backwards to make any expression of that like palatable to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, you know, Adam Sandler's whole brand is yelling and punching things.
And here's the line that he uses to get the woman to go out with him. She's the publicist, so she's trying to get him to like chill and like stop cursing on television and like stop punching people in the face because she doesn't want to kick him off the tour. And he's like, well, at least I didn't punch anybody in the face. And she's like, oh, you're right. And then they go on a date.
Yeah. You know who else is in this, though?
Who?
Bob Barker.
Yeah, he kicks the shit out of Bob Barker.
Yeah. The director told Bob Barker that a stunt double would be used in the fight scene, but he insisted on doing his own stunt, saying, quote, wait a minute, I know how to fight.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, Bob Barker studied Tang Soo Do karate for decades under Chuck Norris and his brother Aaron Norris. So he's not fucking around at all. Yeah.
Good for him.
Like I said, I had watched this on cable so many times, and so I had seen the version that was edited for TV. And like, so in that fight scene, he punches Bob Barker and says, the price is wrong, bitch. But the TV edit version, he says, the price is wrong, Bob. So I was very surprised when he said bitch. I was like, oh, I didn't know he said that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Bob Barker's old. He's 95.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, I was just like, just looked it up. He's 95. He's still alive.
Oh God, what's his name? Ben Stiller is in this.
Ben Stiller is doing his mean character.
His mean character as the abusive nursing home guy. And it's really frustrating to me that we never get any closure on him. Like, his grandma just doesn't live there anymore. But
yeah,
we never see that guy get his
comeuppance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently there was a deleted scene that involved Happy throwing him out of the window after finding out how badly his grandma was treated. Yeah. That made me feel better. I was like, okay, well, at least they were going
to
do that.
They tried to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Didn't fit.
Apparently, in real life, Adam Sandler is terrible at both hockey and golf. So, which I thought was interesting, because he, like, is pretty convincing with a hockey stick, I thought.
I don't know, but he's not supposed to be good.
Yeah. But, like, when he was, like, doing the thing that he's good at, it was convincing. Although, I was really curious how they shot those shots of, like, the traveling golf ball, like,
I
from the golf ball's perspective.
I bet they were... Do you think that some of them were repeated?
Oh, some of them were definitely repeated,
So
yes.
I think they must have been really expensive.
Yeah.
Because why else would they repeat them like that? Like, it's so obvious that they're repeating...
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought about that also.
There was another shot that I really loved, which was when he goes on a date with Julie Bowen, he takes her to a skating rink, and the Zamboni driver is there, and he pays the Zamboni driver to, like, let them have the rink, and the song Endless Love is playing, and... there's the Zamboni driver's in the foreground, and then in the background you see the two of them, like, skating out of focus, and the Zamboni driver is just passionately sitting there singing Endless Love to himself.
Yeah,
I really
enjoyed
that. Yeah,
I'm googling to see if I can find how they did those ball shots. Can't find it.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else on Happy Gilmore?
I don't think so. The scene with Bob Barker increased the ratings for The Price is Right.
Oh, yeah.
Barker claimed that someone in the audience asked him about Happy Gilmore almost every day.
Adam Sandler's production company is called Happy Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, in my brain, think about that and then think of the title of each film every time I said them.
I keep mixing them up. I keep, like, trying to explain to people that I've just watched both of them. I also watched both of them within, like, a 12-hour time period.
Yeah.
And I keep mixing them up and getting really confused. I think that's all I got for Happy Gilmore.
Cool.
Do you want to do a media roundup, or?
Oh, no, not really. I had a busy week. I didn't even really have time to watch much.
We can cut this out, but I started the new sketch show that's on Netflix last night.
What's it called?
I Think You Should Leave.
Oh, yeah, I heard that was really funny.
I've only watched 3 episodes. They're short. They're like 17 minutes. It's really weird and really funny.
Yeah.
It's, yes, watch it.
Oh, you know what I watched on Netflix? Here, let's just do this anyway. I think it's called, Bonding. And it's this really short, like, 7-episode, half hour. I watched it all in one sitting. It's about a TV show about a girl who's putting herself through grad school, working as a dominatrix, and her gay friend that she hires as an assistant. It was excellent.
I read the plot for that yesterday.
Made
when
me
it came up.
Maybe reconsider some of my career options. I don't know. It was really good. It was like a nice little nugget. Oh, I finally also watched Wonder Woman.
Oh, what did you think of Wonder Woman?
I had some complicated feelings. I cried less than I expected to. It was very moving. But also, I was just kind of like, I wish this was, like, not about her hanging out with a bunch of guys the whole time.
That's why I didn't like it.
Yeah. Like, if we could have just stayed on that island with all the ladies, that would have been great. Gal Gadot is like a perfect human, and I love her, and I want to see her in so many more things, and it made me want to be strong. Like, it made me want to, like, get physically strong. Because she, like, body checks a tank and then flips it over, like, a table. And that was cool. But I've been, like, watching more warrior women things. Like, I rewatched Kill Bill, and I didn't enjoy that at all.
Oh, really?
I mean, like, there are aspects of it that I appreciate and I enjoy. But, like, it kind of just feels like an excuse to brutalize women's bodies for 2 hours.
And, like, now that the stories about how Quentin Tarantino treated her have come out.
It's like... Right. And the Weinsteins. Like, it's just, you know. I mean, I'm still going to watch the second one, probably. Just for research purposes. But, yeah, it didn't quite click with me that time. I saw it, like, only once, I think, in the theater when it came out. But, yeah, that was disappointing. But, I don't know. It's interesting. Certainly interesting. But I think that's it.
I think that sketch show is the only thing I've watched since we recorded last. I've been able to do more circus lately, so I have been doing that.
That's good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
The other thing that I watched. Motley Crue came out with a collective memoir like 15 years ago. And it's a fascinating book because they all tell the same stories. But they're four different stories.
That's super fun.
Yeah. And so when I found out that they were actually adapting it into a movie, I was like, oh, well, that's impossible. But it actually, I enjoyed it a lot. It's on Netflix. It's called The Dirt. I don't know. It's like everything related to Motley Crue, I enjoy it probably way more than I should. But I found it really interesting. And all things considered, they did a good job with the adaptation. Like, for, like, adapting something like that, which I think is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
It was actually a pretty good job. They did a pretty good job, and they also, like, had to leave a lot of stuff out. And they actually kind of, because there's a lot of, like, breaking the fourth wall since it was a memoir. And they actually acknowledge some of those things, which is interesting. But they leave, like, some of the more scandalous episodes that are in the book out of the movie, which is slightly unfortunate, but I understand why.
Cool.
Because it has to do with, like, doing terrible things to women, but, you know, it's fine. Yeah. That's why I was surprised that I enjoyed the movie so much.
You're able to look past some things sometimes.
Yeah.
As am I.
Well, you have to. Like, we've learned how to do that because we've had to learn how to do that because up until very recently, they didn't really make media for people like us.
No.
You know. They did, but it wasn't, you know, as easy to access.
No, and there wasn't as much of it. And
right. And that's true of basically everyone who isn't a white guy. We've all learned how to. And so, you know, it's harder for them to have to try and empathize with characters who don't look like them. But anyway, let's go eat some dinner.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. Kara, where can people find you?
In the ocean.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, that's not actually true. You can find me on Instagram at Bimps, B-I-M-P-S-E. I wish I was in the ocean.
Me too.
But I am not.
You can find me on Instagram at JordoPC. This podcast is on Instagram at WistfulPod. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. At Wistful Pod. We'll be back next week with an episode of What Am I Chewing? We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.